This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. The world has showered many accolades on British comedian Eddie Izzard. The New York Times claims that his only competition for sheer comic genius is Chris Rock. John Cleese once said that he's the lost python. Robin Williams called Izzard a velvet razor, gentle cutting edge.
But if you ask Izzard to describe himself, he opts for runner, political campaigner, fashion icon, human. Granted, aren't we all? And yet, not that many humans have the brilliance and courage to rocket to fame doing things like strutting on stage in drag and poking fun at the Spanish Inquisition. But that's pure Izzard. Here he is in his 2000 HBO special, Dressed to Kill, where he riffs on the idea that the Inquisition would have been far different if it had been run by the Church of England instead of the Roman Catholic Church.
Cake or death? Cake, please. Very well. Give him cake. Oh, thanks very much. Very nice. You, cake or death? Cake for me too, please. Very well. Give him cake too. We're gonna run out of cake at this rate.
Sorry, I've been hearing that tape all day, and it still makes me laugh. Eddie Izzard's latest stand-up show is called Force Majeure. He's taking it to 25 countries across 5 continents, and he begins his United States stretch this week. He'll be performing Force Majeure at the Wang Theater on May 8th through the 10th, but he's with us right now in the studio. Eddie Izzard, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. I got to pick up on one thing. Fashion icon? I said I was a fashion icon?
Right here on the front, I believe, right here on the front page of your bio on your website. There it is. I got it printed out.
I say I'm a fashion hailstorm.
And human.
Hang on, but that's not me saying that. That's someone who's hailing. I don't know who do the
that's
hailing.
That's from
then.
Your website. It's the bio.
Oh, I see. That's
it's
some,
the bio.
Oh, right.
Notice how it says at the top, in your own words, his youth in his own words.
Yeah, I think it's the next bit on from that. I think that's a paragraph from someone who's, it's like, what do they say? You know, people come up with new albums and they say breathtaking or staggering or unbelievable, incredible new album. You know when they do and there's no quote. The quote is not attributed to anyone. That's what that has ended up as. No, fashion icon, no. Political icon, yes. Human, yes.
Runner, yes.
I can do. Yes, I do running. I will get on to the guys at the website. So we're going to take out
fashion. Tell them to add fact checker too, because it's not that often that I have a comedian come in and the first thing he does is fact check our scripts.
I know. Well, it's I'm a fashion. I'm not a victim. I'm someone who is a bloke who's put on a bit of makeup and you know I've had to carve a line as a very blokey body that I have. It's what is the word? The adjective that I'm looking for. I'm a fashion learner. I have learnt fashion. I don't have it built in. And then people do think, oh, you're transvestite, you would know this. I don't have that design thing built in. I've had to work very hard on it. So I'm a fashion student, a vague student, learner. I don't know. This isn't a great... I haven't got the line polished here for what I am in the fashion thing. But sometimes vast mistake of fashion, I think, would have been...
Vast mistake.
Well, especially when I first came out. That was even before that, even in blokey attire, I was all over the place. But what is it I have good... No, I've got the girly thing. I know makeup well, but I can't... I just... fashion.
Far better than I do, I have to say. But so let me ask you, this morning, just this morning on NPR, they ran an interview with you that you had spoken with David Greene. And
right.
And he, you know, he had asked you about, because he was in Washington and you had been in New York when you did this interview with him, and he asked you about what you were wearing because of the fact that you had performed in drag before. And a lot
I don't
of
call it drag, by the way.
Transvestite.
No, I no? just say enclosed.
Enclosed.
Well, you know, I wear dresses occasionally, I wear heels, I wear makeup. It's like women don't wear drag when they put pants on, yeah?
That's true, because otherwise I'd be dressing in drag every day.
And drag really means costume. I've seen it used as an equivalent of costume, and it's very arch. When gay men tend to do drag, it tends to be a gay man drag
right.
thing, and that is more costume like. Whereas what I'm trying to land is, you know, I'm running for mayor, and I will be wearing makeup whatever I want to wear or not as women have. They have total rights like that as women do in the United Nations Charter, which isn't actually in there, but I say that it is. And so, yes, I will be wearing whatever. And it's not drag. It's just clothes.
Okay.
I'm just wearing dresses, things, heels, makeup, whatever.
All right. Well, the reason why I bring it up is because you had told him that you didn't like the fact that he had asked you about it because you wanted the world to get to a point where...
It's boring.
It's boring.
Yes.
Exactly. And yet, it's not yet... totally boring. So
well, it's pretty boring.
I just went down the
shops in the middle of Boston, and I didn't get attacked. So that's quite
boring. That should not be the standard of not being boring, getting attacked.
But it is. But boringness is where we're trying to get to. I don't know if other LGBT people agree with this, but if we can hit boring, when we hit boring, when people say, "Yeah, so what? Are you any good at being a librarian, being a pole vaulter, javelin thrower, accountant?" You know, that's what people really want to know. And sexuality, don't give a monkey's.
Okay. Well, let's hear a little bit more about this current tour that you are on, the Force Majeure Tour.
Yeah.
French for force of nature, I believe.
Yeah, people, some call it act of God. I translate it as force of nature. It means major force, literal.
Is it a declaration of your own talents on stage?
No, I think it's a declaration of what everyone needs to be in life. We need to be a force of nature. We need to actually, if life is like a river and we're paddling in our own little boats, you got to paddle like crazy, mate. You can't, if you got to either forward paddle or back paddle. I sometimes back paddle, which is quite interesting. I paddled to stop my comedy career rising so that I could do drama, so that I could now do Hannibal and The Riches and Valkyrie and Ocean's movies, to bring that up while I was back paddling and paddling on my comedy career.
Right. Well, but while you were doing that, I was reading some interviews you had done from that time a couple years ago, and it wasn't as easy to backpedal. The world didn't necessarily want you to take on a new role as a dramatic figure.
Yes. Well, that's the back paddling. It's annoying that it's so close, those two words. That's slightly different. It's actually the transition from being canoeing down the comedy river to canoeing down the drama river. That's the one that they weren't sure. Are you in the right river, mate? That's what was initially happening. But because if you're less known, then people just judge you on what it is that they see. If you're Captain Comedy, and my stuff is quite beguiling, it's very Python influenced, and that stuff, people want to repeat it, and people have gone around, people walk up to me and just say Cake or Death, and or the Darth Vader canteen, Death Star canteen sketch, which there's a sequel to that. This is Darth Vader ordering food on the Death Star and getting told to get a tray, and he says he doesn't want one. It just goes on forever. But yes, I've now been more allowed to go across, and especially in Hannibal, maybe because playing psychotic characters is quite close to being a comedian. People just think we're slightly psychotic anyway.
Well, you mentioned the Vader sketch, and we have a little bit of it, and it does go on forever, but we pulled a little clip of it, so let's let everyone listen to your imagining of when Lord Vader may have visited the Death Star canteen.
I will have the penne alla arrabbiata. You'll need a tray. Do you know who I am? I am Vader. I can kill you with a single thought.
Well, you'll still need a tray.
No, I will not need a tray. I do not need a tray to kill you. I can kill you without a tray, with the power of the Force, which is strong within me, even though I could kill you with a tray if I so wished.
No, the food is hot. You'll need a tray to put the food on.
Oh, I see the food is hot. I'm sorry. I did not realize.
Oh, that's a historic clip of Eddie Izzard, who's in our studios now live because he is currently on tour with his new show, Force Majeure. Eddie, do you mind if I ask you? You mentioned, and we had mentioned in the introduction, that you call your comedy Python-esque, and John Cleese himself said you're the lost Python. I mean, that's quite incredible praise.
That's top honor. That's I asked John as well, because I wasn't sure if he had said it, and he said he did say it. So, and I think he meant, I didn't quite ask him what he quite meant, and I think it's that I was just born 20 years too late. But I would have, if they had formed Python, if anyone's seen, because I am an action transvestite, so I know these things, the Magnificent Seven, so action movies, I know, you know, I'm just a very on top of action movies. So Magnificent Seven, there's Horst Buchholz, a German actor, actually played this other, he played a Mexican cowboy who just hangs around. There was the Magnificent Six, and he just hangs around them until they let him join. Actually, the numbers even work. So if there were six of Python and I was in that age, I would have hung around like Horst Buchholz's character in the Magnificent Seven until they let me be in Python, even though they might have shot me before that. But I'm just such a fan of the thing.
Were they an unconscious influence early in your career or a very conscious one?
In my stand-up career, totally conscious. I mean, you know, when you're starting off, you don't really know what's going on. In fact, no, I borrowed from a John Cleese sketch, very early sketch, which I just think we just did one of his sketches from his early days when he was even pre-Python. But yeah, it was totally, I was just trying to be in Python. I was trying to do surreal stuff at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, which is the big place everyone goes in Europe. And yeah, I was just trying to do that. And I couldn't get sketch comedy going. And then I did street performing, which totally took me away from Python. Mm-hmm. I did physical situation comedy, getting on 5-foot unicycle, escaping from a pair of handcuffs. So I learned how to play myself. This was something I realized, I felt America did better than Britain. And we seem to do more character work, and Americans seem to do more star vehicle playing yourself stuff. And then the stand-up became this perfect mix of the narrator, which is me, mm-hmm. and then going into character work where little people talk like Darth Vader and the woman behind the counter, it's supposed to be a woman behind the counter, but and that's the character work. So it all mixes together.
Interesting, because I'm just looking at how you describe yourself on your Twitter account, and you say I'm a British European and think like an American.
Yes.
So I mean, is that a big part of how you would do?
And
your
I was born
work?
In an Arabic country.
Born in an Arabic country.
Is
Yemen.
Is the last
right?
part of that? Yeah. So they're thinking like an American. Well, I was totally into Hollywood. Hollywood doesn't really exist. Obviously, it's a sensibility of, you know, let's make films. But the go do it, like, go build it of America, I loved. And then Watergate happened. I realized, oh, there's a dark side to America, which is not what I'm into. And then it sort of came back. I don't know, when did it come back? It came back when I started going to America, maybe with the Clinton era or something. There is an America that I totally like, and there's a part of America I don't like. There's a part of Britain I like, and there's a part of Britain I don't like. The Thatcher Britain, I didn't like that at all. So there's a political thing. But let's go build it, let's go do it, which is, in fact, this distillation of the immigrant spirit. That's what I like. I feel like an immigrant, even though I, you know, grew up mostly in Britain, even though I was born in Yemen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you moved around quite a lot, even within the UK after your family finally went there from Yemen.
Yes,
right?
Dad worked on BP refinery, so he just kept moving around the refinery to refinery. So, but that didn't seem to make any difference. But I had all this energy. Let's go do it. Let's go build it. And I was trying to get into the Cambridge Footlights, which John Cleese had been in, which started Python, which is a Cambridge University thing. I wasn't working hard enough. I started not working at university. I started not working just before university in order to be cool, because I wasn't very cool. I thought, I'm not cool. I better stop working.
So better stop working.
Yeah, because I was just getting exam results. And then girls reappeared in my school. It was an all-boys school. Suddenly the girls reappear. And I thought, well, I'm not doing sports. I'd given. They don't play football. They don't play soccer at this school. So And all I had was comedy left. So it was comedy and not working. These are my two things of how to be cool. Trying to be a rebel by not working, which no one was paying attention to. And all the girls in my class were working like crazy. They were driven like express trains. They would get given a whole week's homework. And the next day, the next maths lesson, I was doing maths, physics, chemistry. Next maths lesson, they said, I've got a problem with the last question. They'd always say the last. I'm not sure if they always said that. In my head, I've got a problem with the last question. And we hadn't even started, me and my friend Peter Hers, who is an American guy, we hadn't even started looking at it. Not until the last night at about 11 p.m. will we start doing the whole week's homework. So that was my way. So I come from sciences into comedy, through accounting into comedy and drama.
Part of me wants to say plus Sachange, but yeah. But let me ask you, there is one part of your life story, which I know you've spoken about openly before, that I don't know if a better way to say it than it just strikes me as inexorably sad that so much of your career you felt has been an attempt to bring your mother back, who died when you were, what, 6 or 7?
Yeah.
To reconnect with her somehow?
Yeah. There's a documentary called Believe, and in that there was this bit, Sarah Townsend, she directed it, and she kept shooting to try and find something, because I'm quite blocked off emotionally. And then finally she found this moment where I didn't actually know quite what I was saying. It does seem to be true. I do seem to be kind of trying to stack up enough things that could reach through and just bring her back. I don't know that might. I don't know. I don't know what was. I didn't know quite what I was saying. I'd never said it before, and I feel it's a very curious thing. I'm just trying to get my mum to notice from somewhere else. But I don't think she's ever coming back. It doesn't seem to. No one ever comes back. So I don't believe in God anymore. Why would you let Hitler live longer than my mother? It doesn't make any sense. I think it's all random. I believe in humans. I believe in us. I think there's more goodwill than ill will. And but I'm going to keep working because I've swapped the affection of my mother for the affection of audiences. And it's not unconditional. It's conditional. So you have to do good work. Otherwise, they give you medium response. And if you do really good work, they give you very good response. So,
well, speaking of good work, I want to play one last little bit, which I believe is more recent of your work. It's from the Force Majeure tour. And you mentioned God just a second ago, which seemed an apropos introduction to this bit.
But if a God did turn up, we'd want him to sound a certain way. We want him to sound deep and throaty. If a God turned up and said, I have it, sir. I've been away for many years, and now I am back. And you people of Europe, you do not go to church anymore. What are you doing on a Sunday?
We are watching box sets of Scandinavian psychodramas.
Ooh, didn't expect that answer.
Yes, girl with a dragon tattoo, fish with a banana haircut. The cheese sandwich that ate itself. Wallander, billander, ballander, jillander. The girl with a lumpy jumper.
That's Eddie Izzard from his new Force Majeure World Tour. I saw that you had on Facebook asked Americans around the country to give you interesting historical facts about where they live.
Yes, this is a great idea that someone came up with, and I thought, yeah, let's run with this. So I'm asking everyone, if they put hashtag Eddie Izzard Tour out there, then we'll be able to pick up these facts, put out interesting facts that they found out about their city that I'm coming to, and all the dates are listed on eddieizzard.com.
Can I give you a couple interesting ones about Boston right
now?
Yeah.
Okay. I might know them, but...
Oh, okay. So these are just for some of the ancient blue laws that we have here from like 400 years ago.
And blue laws means what?
Well, I guess they're just the old laws from the Puritan times of New England. And they include things like it is illegal to sell rabbits, ducks, and chickens that have been dyed a different color. How's that? Or there's a City of Boston ordinance that says it's illegal. I guess this one's more recent. That it's illegal to harass someone with a laser beam. So I guess take that, Lord Vader. And one of my personal favorites, it's illegal to keep a mule on the second floor of a building in Boston.
Yeah, that must have been some old mule second floor problem that was going on. And second floor means first floor, yeah? Because your first floor is your ground floor, yeah?
Yeah, so this one, first floor for you, second floor for us. That's correct.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's an interesting thing that you get here. Where's the first floor going? The ground floor. Because we've got one in London taxis. You've got to have a bale of hay in there.
Oh, really?
You have to have a bale of hay. No one has the bale of hay, but the ordinance is still there. It's compulsory to have a bale of hay because of horses pooing. And you know the French, when they say, and the Spanish, when they say good luck, they say merde, which is poo. Poo spelt with a beginning with an S word, yeah? But the reason for that is because when horses would come, when a successful show happened, all the horses and carts would turn up bringing people, horses and coaches, and there would be a lot of poo left behind, and that would be success because that's why they say merde. You see, it's a good luck, sir.
Well, let's consider that a note of ending this interview on a success.
Yes.
Eddie Izzard is a comedian and actor. His latest stand-up show is called Force Majeure. He's taking it around the country and will be here in Boston at the Wang Theater on May 8th through the 10th. Eddie Izzard, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston. We'll be right back.